There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, live from the fantail of the USS Alabama at Battleship Memorial Park. We're back! My favorite place to do a radio show, and we finally got back here after months. It seems like it's been forever. But we're doing the show till 1, and then the Scuttlebutt Network comes on. Cal and Tom and the crew come on at 1 o'clock, so stay tuned for that as well. And it's good to be back, and it's good to have the executive director of Battleship Memorial Park, General Janet Cobb. Thanks for having us back.
Sean Sullivan, it's been a month of Sunday since you've had this view of beautiful Mobile Bay. Welcome back.
I love it. I mean, I really do. No joke. And this is my favorite place to do a radio show, and I've been missing it desperately. And, you know, but we've all been dealing with this and navigating the COVID situation. But here, I was so happy when the announcement came out, when y'all opened back up, because right? I was just thinking about stuff like people, not even us here, people driving I-10 coming by and not being able to come here.
Oh, we had calls all for the 8 weeks we were closed. You know, we were actually closed completely for 6 weeks, and then the order from the state health officer partially lifted, and we were able to open the gift shop and the grounds.
Okay.
And we had plenty of people come out. During that six-week period when we were completely closed, this staff, these men and women, 40-something men and women, they came in every day. I'm telling you, I had my development director painting. We had people on their hands and knees needle gunning, using a 1949 paint chisel to clean the decks of paint. So many of our compartments have been restored. The ward room is beautiful, sick bay. So many things were redone, brought up to speed, painted with real, just really durable paint that is accurate color from World War II. So much work done by all the departments. Their spirit was incredible. We are so grateful that the Battleship Commission, without hesitation, said, yes, these men and women need to continue to work. Because, you know, we take care of two National Historic Landmarks here. Battleship USS Alabama and submarine USS Drum. And I mean, we also had a Wednesday lunch. 1 week somebody donated crawfish, or we chowed down on that. It was a great time of fellowship. But people, we were just all grateful to be paid every week, and it was our pleasure to take care of this park.
Well, I tell you what, it shows every time you come out here, but it shows the time that you had. I mean, you made the silver lining out of the gray cloud. I follow y'all's social media platforms, and it was kind of fun. I didn't like the fact y'all were closed, but watching all the things were going on, like the boardroom and all that, y'all were documenting that, and it was great. So you get these calls from people that want to come by, and that kind of tells a story, too. Now, this is... We here in Alabama and South Alabama know this. This is our big tourist attraction. But it's not just us. I mean, I don't know. Y'all keep records, I'm sure, of where people come from here.
We do.
And it's a lot of people that aren't from around here.
Yeah. We keep a deck log, and not everyone fills it out. But when they do, we ask them, you know, where they're staying and what their destination is. You know, 35 to 50 million people, I think, travel I-10 every year, and, you know, a ton on the causeway as well. And they, our marketing research in the past has shown that most people, you know, it's the old real estate thing, location, location, mm-hmm. location. The kids in the back street seats screaming, Daddy, I want to go see the big gray boat.
Yes.
Got to pull off, got to go see it. And the people have come back, and this week, what we're doing now, because of the COVID restrictions, you'll see our frontline staff in the gift shop wearing a mask and gloves. We have plexiglass up. We've moved our admissions area into the corner of the pavilion that fronts the parking lot. We can get more people in, into the air conditioning. We can manage more people that way. And what we are hearing, people are saying, we are just so thankful that you're open. We had 1,300 something on Saturday and just over 1,000 on Sunday, and great numbers during the week. So our visitors are coming back. When Disney World and those properties in Florida, all those attractions reopen, that business will even increase because people are going to busting out.
That because people come, they're on their way.
We do. We ask.
That's a good point. I didn't think about how it's all interconnected. And that's where people coming through. For people here, there's always something to do at Battleship Memorial Park. And the living history drills are so popular.
They'll be back this year, of course. They'll be back this weekend, actually. I think that's right. They're going to not stay overnight this time because of the COVID restrictions. We don't have any scouts or any overnight adventure on board. We don't have any special events going on right now. And the Living History crew, you know, when they come, they berth aboard on Friday and Saturday night. Mm-hmm. But they won't this time. But they will be doing their drill. The Yak aircraft will be attacking and flying, and the weather should be spectacular. Okay. So another great time. The drum crew will be here. There's a group of reenactors that have taken over the drum. They do a reenactment as well. They'll be on the deck of the submarine this time. They will not go below so that we can have our visitors go through observing social distance. But people are doing great. We're not having any problems here and no real complaints.
Well, it's great to have y'all back open. And, you know, what we talk about here is the history and the history of the USS Alabama, but also respect for all our branches of the military. And y'all have an Operation Gratitude going on here. And I want to talk about that. Let folks know as they come out, say they come out this weekend for that, or how does that work? What is Operation Gratitude?
In our post office, which has been completely restored to look as it would have during World War II, we have an area where you can pull a form out. This is a letter that an individual or children or adults or a family can write to a service member, thanking them for their service and all of the branches in the military. There's a mailbox there where you can drop that. We collect those letters and we end up mailing those out. Our curation department runs that program. Sometimes we also have the crewmates on board. They will have a station in the wardroom so people can do that. But we'll have those forms available this weekend. And we encourage people, as someone who served for many years, getting that letter, you know, back when people sent snail mail, there's just something still magical about getting a letter and opening it up and having somebody thanking you for your service.
These letters are going out in care packages to military, not just right here, right?
That's right. They go out around the world. They sure do.
We just sit down, write the letter, and
drop it in that box.
Say, hey, by the way, I'm at the USS Alabama.
That's cool, too. It is. Back to Living History Crew this weekend. Activities will start for the public at 8:30. They'll post the colors on the fantail of the Alabama. The aircraft, the Yak attack will occur. It starts at 1 o'clock with the deck drills, some of the damage control drills, and then the aircraft thing. And then the USGS drum, again, that crew will be on deck on Saturday. So,
you just
great weekend.
General, you just breeze by the Yak attack thing. Okay, so for folks that haven't come out, just there are aircraft attacking the Alabama, simulating the attack.
And from my vantage point, I always go up as high as I can on the ship. And what you're seeing are three Soviet-era, their Yak aircraft. They are propeller-driven. A couple of pilots or volunteers, they've done it for us for several years. They have to fly their aircraft, get the hours in. They fly, I think, out of the Irvington Airport. And it's spectacular. I've seen them when they've had four or three. I've seen them when they've had one. And you look up there, and then the public lines the rails, and you've got, you know, just almost 1,000 people on the deck, and you look up and you see that formation of aircraft, and then you see them peel off like we see them in the movies, or when we see the Blues or the Thunderbirds, and they come in at deck high. They're screaming toward the deck. They have smoke. We have three of our 20 millimeter Oerlikon machine guns that have been retrofitted with propane, and one of our 40 millimeter Bofors guns, and they're just boom boom boom, you know. And then the machine guns. They fly over, they buzz over, people are screaming, and sometime they'll pop smoke like they've been hit, and it is just amazing.
And that's going on, that's what I'm saying to people here.
Yeah.
If y'all have not done this, people say, do it for the kids. Well, and the big kids like me.
And the big kids are screaming, too.
Yeah, I love it, too. So that starts at 8:30. The Yak attack will be
about 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Yeah.
All right. And people can go, I'm sure, find out more information on the social media platforms.
Absolutely.
As always. Thank you for having us out here. Thank you for having us back.
Good to have you back. Everybody stay safe. Come see us, as my predecessor Bill Tunnel would say. And I change that a little bit. I say come see us soon.
That's right. Y'all can come see us right now.
Right now. Come on. The weather's beautiful on Mobile Bay.
It's great. Thanks for having us.
Take care, friend.
All right. We're coming right back with more of Midday Mobile. John Sharp joins us. Who owns the statue? The Admiral Sim statue has been removed and put in the History Museum of Mobile, but there's a question about who actually owns it. We'll talk to John Sharp about that coming up next.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
1065 Midday Mobile, live from the fantail of the USS Alabama. It's one of my favorite, frankly, it's my favorite place to do a radio show that I ever have, and I'm glad to be back out here. Good also to talk to my buddy John Sharp from AL.com. Hey, John.
Hey, Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing good, and I want to talk to you about the who's got the ownership of the Admiral Sims statue, but let me throw something at you right now, all right? Let me throw you something. So I'm here during the news break talking to General Cobb, Janet Cobb, Executive Director here at the USS Alabama, and she said, well, you know, there was a Captain Sims that served on the Alabama in World War II who happened to be Raphael Sims IV, a naval aviator and a captain that served on the USS Alabama.
Interesting.
Direct descendant of Admiral Sims of the statue, served here on the USS Alabama. That's pretty incredible. I mean, he had lived elsewhere in Alabama. I think he was born in Montgomery and gone to school in Huntsville or something to that effect. But he during World War II, was serving on the Alabama. Pretty awesome.
That is pretty cool. I mean, you're talking about 100 year old history here. I mean, there's a lot of links there. So it's fascinating history.
It is just the odds. If you go that many generations, think about Americans and, you know, spread out and going here, there, and he ends up on the USS Alabama. So it was just an interesting piece of connective history there. All right, a lot to talk about here in your story over at AL.com, talking about who owns the Admiral Sims statue. Well, it's in the History Museum of Mobile right now, right?
That's correct. It's in storage right now over at the History Museum. The plan from the mayor's office is to have it publicly displayed eventually within the museum. But as we saw yesterday, there is a little bit of a curveball here, and that'll be up to the city council perhaps to decide on whether or not it should be represented to a group, a Sons of the Confederate Veterans group, that is claiming that they feel like that they're the rightful owners of the, and they should have unrestricted possession and ownership of the statue.
Well, you quoted here in your story, the group claims that they are, quote, competent and worthy recipient, end quote, of the monument. Does that mean they have some vested ownership of it? You see what I'm saying? When you're saying you're competent and worthy recipient, is that because you're, you know, named Sims Camp 11 of the Sons of the Confederate Veterans, or was there some document out there that said it would go to them? What's the story?
Well, right now, from what we can tell, and looking at old newspaper articles and gathering information from the city, which has gone back and they've done some historical research, is that what we're looking at is that this group are descendants of the original veterans group, Sons of the Confederate group, that initially commissioned the statue. And there's a connection to the Daughters of the Confederacy as well, that they went out and raised the money to build this statue or to have it erected in downtown Mobile. However, there's also a newspaper article the day that the statue was unveiled, almost 120 years ago now. I think it's June 27th, 120 years ago, 1900. When the statue was unveiled, the mayor at the time, and it's quoted in this newspaper article that was forwarded to me, that the monument was gifted over or presented over to the city of Mobile. So it is in the city of Mobile's possession at that point in time. So while the monument might have been the money that was raised to build the monument or erect it was handled by another group, wasn't a city, wasn't by the taxpayers at the time, it was actually gifted over to the city and has been put in a public venue ever since. It's moved around downtown Mobile over the years, but it's been at the location where it's presently at for quite some time. But, that's kind of the story as I understand it at this point. And we're looking at these old articles as well, trying to determine. But if you talk to both Mobile Mayor Sandy Stinson and the council members, some of them, including Councilman Bess Rich, that have questions on whether or not the future of the monument should be in the city's possession, or it should this group's possession. I think it's kind of universal that they all believe that, yes, in fact, that this is a was gifted over to the city many years ago.
Yeah, but you're using that verb, right? So gifted, like, so let's say gifted versus presented, right? I mean, gifted means something to me different than presented or maybe donate. You see, I mean, gifted makes it like now the ownership. If it says that it was gifted to the city, then it's theirs, right? I mean, if I buy you like a cool sweater this Christmas or something like that and I gift it to you, well, that's your sweater, man.
Yeah, and you're correct. The mayor at the time, his name was Mayor Bush. I don't believe there was any direct relationship to the Anheuser-Busch family at the time, but at any rate, he stepped on the platform and accepted. The word is accepted in the newspaper article. He accepted the statue, and then he presented he gave a speech after that. Which, interestingly, the newspaper articles at the time pretty much include the entire speech in the story. So you can dive on through that as you wish. But, so the word accepted was used in that article.
Okay. So the mayor, council, they're disagreeing. They think it needs to be displayed in the museum, right? That's the rightful place for it.
Well, the mayor thinks so, I haven't got really a good read. I mean, some of the council members individually have told me that they think that's the best place for it. But now Councilman Bess Rich says, there's another side to the story, and she believes it should be at least publicly aired, because this is a very sensitive issue right now going on throughout the country where, what to do with these monuments once they're removed. And so Councilwoman Bess Rich, raised the issue yesterday that, perhaps we need to have a public hearing or at least public conversation about this a little bit more. And so that'll lead us to next Tuesday, in which a representative with what they call Raphael Sims Camp 11 of the Confederate Sons of the Confederate Veterans will be at the council meeting to provide their side of the story and their beliefs on that, they should have possession of this statue as well as the base. Talking to the council members.
Okay, the base as well.
That's clear that there's no interest in having it returned to where it's originally at. So it's kind of like. So I guess the question is, if the statue is given to another party, to this Sons of the Confederate Veterans Group, where would it be located? I think that's a question. Perhaps it'll be raised on Tuesday.
So that has not been answered. There's been no information on that out where it would go if it did go to the Sons of Confederate Veterans Sims Camp 11.
That's correct. It has not been publicly disclosed, from my understanding, very vague private property.
All right. I have just about a minute here to get into this, and then we'll go to the news break and come back. But the money, and I'm looking at my text that I get in here, and as much as just the discussion over removing the statue, I get text of plenty in here then calls to the station saying, well, who's going to pay the $25,000?
Good question. From what I understand, there are several online fundraising efforts going on. Talking to the mayor yesterday, he fully expects that money to be raised from these fundraising events, but they got 30 days to pay the fine. That is the time limit. So the clock is ticking to raise the money right now. He says it's not going to come from the taxpayers. So we'll see how much is raised privately to resolve this fine.
Okay, so coming back, more with John Sharp from AL.com. We're talking about latest here on the Admiral Sims statue. Also, I've got some... he and I are going to talk Ed Meese. And that's something that I don't say often, but John Sharp, Ed Meese coming up in just a little bit, too. All right, news is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile, live from the fantail of the USS Alabama. And Just got the information, Matt. We're going to talk about this more and continue our conversation with John Sharp, but Shay, historian extraordinaire here at the USS Alabama. I'm going to get you on. We're going to get you on the show sometime soon, if not here, before the end of the show. Do want to, John? I now have what I said, you know, earlier to you, that I've heard that a direct descendant of Admiral Sims served aboard the USS Alabama. I got all the documentation here on this. This is something, Matt. This is what we're talking about in Mobile's history, you know, from 120 years ago with the statue to what we're talking about of World War II and those links together to us sitting here today. Alan, it's good stuff, and we'll get back into it here in just a second. John, we were talking about who's paying and how the money will be paid in the fine, and so Mayor Stimson's saying that no taxpayer money will be used to pay the $25,000 to the state.
That's correct. That's what he said yesterday.
So, with that being said, with no money coming from the taxpayers, these groups have 30 days, you said, to pay. Is it 30 days from when it was removed? Is it 30 days from when the AG said your time's up? What's that 30-day window?
Yeah, good question. I have to confirm that. I don't know for a fact, so I would be hesitant to say whether or not it's 30 days from June 4th or 30 days from last Friday. So that is a good question to ask. Assuming it would be on the AG's when the settlement or when the agreement was signed off by the city and the attorney general, so that would be last Friday.
So, I mean, I've had this conversation with the AG. You and I have talked about it. So it sounds to me, and what the AG said to me, it's basically a $25,000 fine, and that's it. So any county or city in the state of Alabama that wants to violate the 2017 Monuments Act can do that and pay $25,000.
You're correct, and that's per violation, though. That is not per city. So if the city decided that...
Per violation being per structure, or...?
Right, that's correct. So if there's another monument or structure in the city that the city decides, well, we want to remove that as well, that another $25,000 could be potentially triggered from that, which makes an interesting, raises an interesting question. In some cities where there's multiple plaques that are being removed, I haven't really looked into what's going on, for instance, at the University of Alabama, but in my understanding from what I've been told by the Attorney General's office, it's per violation.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the University of Alabama, I think, is something kind of a different discussion, because that's, you know, state funded and state property there. But on this individual, I mean, it just, I don't know, they hastily threw the law together in 2017. It sounds like this is, it's because in 2017 the language was, we're going to prevent monuments from being removed. It's not that, hey, the state's going to profit when monuments are removed, right? I mean, that, it's the
right,
the spirit of what they were pushing with that act is not just a excise tax on removing of monuments.
That's correct. There had been an effort in the legislature before things, you know, got frozen out due to the COVID-19 situation, is that there was an effort in the legislature, I think, to add a $10,000 fine per day for violation. So that would have made it a little, you know, obviously more expensive. And that was under consideration, although that bill did not go anywhere. And the question is whether or not the legislature will have the appetite to bring that back up next spring. And that seems like a long time away as well, considering every, you know, how fluid this particular issue is.
Yeah, with it, by next spring, you know, there may not be a monument left to remove. All right, I want to shift gears and something that it's not every day that you and I talk Ed Meese, John, but we're talking Ed Meese today. And there's an ad running, I just ran a little bit ago, ad running on our station with Ed Meese endorsing Jeff Sessions and defending the recusal decision. So, you know, fans of Ronald Reagan know Ed Meese, and Ed Meese is saying that Jeff Sessions did the right thing.
Yeah, they should know. If you're a fan of Ronald Reagan, and a little bit of history lesson, I guess, he was very instrumental, I believe, in the whole, you know, there, a lot of issues of the Reagan era, especially the Just Say No campaign. He was involved in that, and the Meats Commission or Committee, anti-pornography, I believe at the time he was instrumental in that. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of history there. And very instrumental, a strong advisor to Ronald Reagan at that time. And, yes, his, I talked to Jeff Sessions yesterday. He was very happy to receive this endorsement. Will it matter? I don't know. I think a lot of people right now are keeping their eyes on whether or not President Trump's coming to Mobile in July. We're waiting to hear more information on that. So, but, you know, very well.
And this, I want to get, you mentioned something there, though.
Is Ed Meese.
Yeah, okay, it is, but you said something important. I know this is not your job is to report the news. You're a journalist, you know. I'm gonna just say you asked the question, does it hold any weight anymore? And I don't know that it does. I think it's interesting, and I think it's interesting to have this discussion of Jeff Sessions making the right choice with the recusal. But in 2020, I'm not trying to be cynical here. I'm just trying to be frank. I don't know that it matters anymore.
Well, that's correct. You raise a good point. I didn't do a big analysis piece on this. I mean, I just reported the story. But he is a well-known figure.
Of course, you did your job.
From the Reagan era,
yeah.
And for Jeff Sessions, that was an important endorsement to receive. He is a 2019 recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, awarded by President Trump. So, I guess the position of Mr. Meese is that, I'm very much a strong supporter of President Trump. But I'm also a great admirer of Jeff Sessions, and I think for the Session campaign, that's important to try and meld those two together at this point, because we all know that Trump and Sessions don't see eye to eye right now at all on this, especially on this recusal issue.
Speaking of which, so the rumor mill starts last week, and then it started really leaking out over the weekend that it was going to be July 11th, President Trump coming to Ladd People Stadium to endorse Tommy Tuberville. That was a story I was told, and I sat on it. And, you know, then it started leaking out over the weekend. We talked about it some Monday. And then by yesterday, I have Ann Davis at the at Ladd People saying she hadn't heard of it. City of Mobile said they hadn't been contacted by the White House. And Tommy Tuberville saying, it'd be nice to have this rally for me, but I don't know about any such thing. What's going on?
Yeah, it's unconfirmed at this point. So right now there's nothing definitive, but it has been widely reported from national outlets and on social media. Even Jeff Sessions has weighed in on Twitter. So, I mean, you have this very concrete rumor, I think, out there. The question I have is social distancing at this event. Does that come into play? Is that a concern for those that would be planning a rally in Mobile? That's definitely a question that we would ask if this thing was confirmed. And how would the logistics of that be handled? But right now we don't have any confirmation that this event will take place. We have seen Tommy Tuberville on with the president on a plane in Dallas, and so that's, I think, kick-started the conversation, especially amongst the national media.
Yeah, but he said in that interview, I guess yesterday, he said we were on the Air Force One, but we didn't talk about this. This is what I'm saying. It's reported. Sure, you know, like Caitlin Collins talked about it. So Alabama, native Alabamian, went to University of Alabama, works for CNN. She reported it. A bunch of other people were talking about it. But then, I'm just a hayseed, John. But when the director at the venue where it's supposed to be said they hadn't heard of it, the city of Mobile said they hadn't heard from the White House, and the person who would have been the beneficiary of this rally by President Trump said they hadn't heard of it, I'm a little bit confused.
Well, I don't blame you for being a little confused. I mean, I haven't really reported on this either. I've just kind of, like you, I've seen it from afar, and I'm...
what's going on?
It, but, you know, we haven't got anything confirmed either. So, at this point, it is, it's still... Maybe there's some background discussion.
It's rumor.
They just don't want to make public at this point. That happens in this business. So, that could be occurring as well.
That it does. All right. Well, listen, John, we will. You and I will talk, I'm sure, by tomorrow when the rumor builds, or the next day when the rumor gets to its top point, and we'll try to hash it out then.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Hopefully we get more clarity on this. Yeah, you're right. Time is ticking. It'll be interesting to see as well what happens at the Tulsa event.
Sure. Yeah, we'll see that on the distancing. John Sharp, AL.com. Always a pleasure, man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, Sean.
All right, good stuff. Coming right back, we are live on the USS Alabama on the Fantail here, and we will continue the discussion. By the way, coming up at 1 o'clock, Scuttlebutt Gentlemen. I don't know if I call them. Well, they're right out there in their Marines. Yes, the Gentlemen, Cal and Tom, will take over with Scuttlebutt Radio Network at 1. But we got a couple minutes when we come back. And as I mentioned, Shea McClain walked in. He's got the paperwork we started talking about at the beginning of the hour on Raphael Sims IV and his service aboard the USS Alabama. Fascinating. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from the USS Alabama here on the Fantail. And we're going to talk some more USS Alabama history in just one second. Right now, some folks I know, they are keen fans of history there, along with many, many other things they do on a daily basis. That's my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Doing good. Let's talk about what's happening at the shop today.
Well, I was thinking, you know, you mentioned talking about history, and we have a holiday coming up this weekend. I think they do need to rename it, though. I think maybe Father's Day should become Father's Moment. What do you think?
Yeah, Father's Afternoon. I've said Father's Afternoon before, Father's Morning. You know, it's not really a full day. But, yes, that Father time on Sunday.
Now, I will mention this. If you do want to find a cool gift for Dad, and it's one of the, you've got one of those dads that sort of buys everything for themselves all the time, you need to come by the shop here at Mobile Bay Coins. Check out all the cool items, from the all the cool pop culture coins to the open L knives, those historical coins that are anywhere from 2,000 years old, you know, up into the 1800s, and then lots of cool jewelry stuff as well if you want to get something like that for Dad.
All right, go check out the gifts for Dad and see them in person at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Tell people how to get there.
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. Of course, you can always check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. And if you want to see some of the cool stuff as it comes in, like and follow us on Instagram and on Facebook.
Hey, thanks, Angelo.
Have a good one, Sean.
All right, will do. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And just a couple minutes left here before the Scuttlebutt boys get started. But as always, good to see Shea McClain, curator here at the USS Alabama. Man who, we could talk under, is it marine archaeology? You and I talked one time.
Yes, correct. I'm a marine archaeologist.
Which is like, it's like Indiana Jones with a boat. It's like the coolest thing. You got the coolest gig. And an historian, that the man that took me down to the radio room here in the USS Alabama, that was fascinating. I can't wait to go back. We got to talk about that on a future show. But I was sitting in here and talking to General Cobb, and she said, we're talking about the Admiral Sims statue and questions about it. And she said, well, you know that Raphael Sims IV served on the USS Alabama. And as the kids say, mind blown.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
Yeah, I think that's maybe a minor fact that a lot of Mobilians and Alabamians in general just didn't know. To be very honest with you, when I signed on board here at USS Alabama, it's a fact I wasn't aware of until I was employed here. And, you know, as we were working through the record of the crews, the biographies of the crews, came across his name. What are the odds? It's got to be,
the
relative. And sure enough, it would turn out to be the great-grandson of Admiral Raphael Sims from the CSS Alabama.
And so he serves on the USS Alabama, naval aviator. And you said right here on the Fantail where we're sitting, this is where his plane would take off from.
That's exactly right. There are two catapults on the Fantail of the ship, and we're 10, 15 feet from those catapults.
Right.
And his plane would have sat directly behind where we're sitting now. Interesting guy. You know, he, young naval officer following, I guess, the family tradition. He joined in the commission, went to Annapolis Commission in, I think, 1934, and found his way as a career naval officer onto the USS St. Louis, which is a cruiser. And it just so happens that cruiser was at Pearl Harbor. He was there and witnessed the attack on Pearl Harbor.
He was at Pearl Harbor?
He was at Pearl Harbor, yes. He was the chief naval aviator on that ship as well. And when he was transferred to the Alabama, He came on and became the chief naval aviation officer on board Alabama. We had three seaplanes. I don't know if a lot of people even knew that, but three, you know, the Alabama was a bit of an aircraft carrier of sorts, considering it had three Kingfisher reconnaissance aircraft.
And those would be launched from catapults to get them to speed to get
correct,
out, right?
Correct. And then they had Well, they had pontoons, and and they would ferry up to the ship. And by the way, the ship would not stop with these planes because, you know, the possibility of always being attacked or torpedoed. So the planes would actually have to keep up with the ship. It was moving at full speed, and there was a bit of an operation where you would swing a boom over and lower a hook, and some brave fellow would shimmy down and help connect that and raise the plane up as the ship was moving.
So here we go. So they land back on the sea, which, by the way, I mean, you think about landing with pontoons in any kind of chopper sea is a sketchy proposition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The pilots are always looking for glass water to land those planes.
Right, absolutely.
So they land up, here they come, and they've got to essentially taxi next to the USS Alabama, keeping the same speed while they drop a hook down and lift it back out of the water.
Right, exactly.
Holy cow. All right. Listen, this is just a bit of the history that you get to impart to folks here at the Alabama. It's great. I mean, there's so many levels here that I love. I mean, people can just come here and just appreciate that, wow, look at this battleship, look at all this stuff. Right? But then if they want to go deeper, there are people interested, like the living history drills and all that, you go deeper.
Absolutely. It's not the ship. As we always say, it is the people who served. It's always the human story, the human experience that we try to share and hand down through generations here in the park. We talk about the sailors, their experiences, their lives. That's why we go to such great lengths, Sean, to interview and get these oral histories. It's so very important. And another reminder, we're losing these veterans, these World War II guys. An extremely high rate in within our generation. We're going to see the end of these guys. You know, within the next few years, will be very few World War II veterans left.
Get you back on the show soon to talk more about that. Shay, thank you for your time.
My pleasure, Sean.
All right, Scuttlebutt is on the way next.